Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you next hour on this January the 21st on the West Coast, now January the 22nd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome anyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, along with those listening in on BBSRadio.com, and before we bring on tonight's guest, Jim Murray, I'm going to play something original. This is one of my pieces that I feel will put us in the space, let's say, musically and metaphysically, into tonight's topic. And you got to just trust me that if you try to just visualize yourself sitting in a park looking at a fountain that's changing colors, and all of this represents all the possibilities that you have in life of becoming who you really are. And this song was sort of inspired that way, and I called it Lakeview Park. That was Lakeview Park, written by yours truly. And I could better describe that as sort of tapping into the grid. And we're going to be talking about that and more with tonight's guest. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And he is my regular Friday night co-host on Evident Footprints and our resident science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. Okay, now I don't have Jim here, so Don, if you're listening, can you make sure we're in contact with him?
We have you can't hear me, Don?
Now I can hear you. There you go. Now you're there. How are you, Jim?
I'm fine. I asked you the same question, and then we discovered that you couldn't hear me for some reason.
Mm-hmm. That usually happens.
Anyway, I'm fine. You're fine. That's a good thing. That was a very interesting musical piece, by the way.
Did you like it?
Yeah. The funny thing about when you play music, I don't get all of it. I don't know what happens, but I don't get all of it. It's almost like the phone system seems to filter out certain parts of it. But from what I could perceive, it sounded very nice.
Well, thank you. Telephones have a very, very limited bandwidth. And it's in the area of the human voice. And so it filters out a lot of lows, a lot of high bass, even a lot of mids, and then extreme highs, the treble range. So, you know, I'm sorry you can't hear it like I'm hearing it, and hopefully it's going over the internet. But anyway, that was a piece that I wrote. I was sort of just tapping into all the energy that was around me, and I started hearing this music. So when I went home, I just sort of wrote it down and played it. I thought, that's what I was hearing. That's what I was feeling. So it's just a moment in time. Nothing to really think is going to leave a mark that 100 years from now, people are going to be dancing to it or something, you know. But I sort of tapped into the grid that we've been talking about, and I felt my consciousness go to a different place. And bringing it back is the difficult part, actually, you know. Let's say recalling everything that one felt or one thought or one heard or didn't hear or didn't think. And taking all that into account, when one taps into this energy grid that is really universal, it's not just something here on the earth, but it's everywhere, you feel like you have to do more, or there's more to find out about yourself and of course, about the nature of the universe. And we seem to struggle between the two, somehow making ourselves more important than that which created us. And it doesn't make sense. I know that we're going to sort of wing tonight's show, meaning we're going to ad lib. So if you want to respond to that or move in a different direction, that's up to you, Jim.
No, I think I'll respond to it because actually it's in line with some of the stuff I had contemplated before the show. First of all, what's really interesting about what you just said is that I've had similar experiences many, many times, as a matter of fact. But, of course, my talents and my interests don't gravitate towards music so much as they do towards scientific truths and related subjects. And so what I found that happens, which is kind of interesting, and it happened a lot more when I was living in northern Michigan because I had the quiet, I had the isolation, I didn't have the kind of pressure, you know, that we endure in normal everyday life. But what I found happens, which is interesting, is that you will struggle to release yourself from the confines of this reality until you get to a point where you feel plugged in, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for myself, I know when I'm there because certain images and other things begin to form and an awareness begins to form, which I guess you could say is kind of alien to the norm, you know, the normal attributes of life. And mm-hmm. then when I start to focus on that and information starts to flow, you definitely are in a different place, you know, whether it's another part of your own mind or whether it's in the universe or whether you're plugged into the universal consciousness, I really am not prepared to say. But regardless, whatever happens is different from your normal existence. And the more you work in that realm, the less you want to come back to this one. It's a really strange kind of a thing because the information that you're asking for and being shown is in itself, you know, a great treat, a great fascination. And yet, if you look at it from the standpoint of its relevance to you, or to me in this case, it's wonderful to be shown these things, but you can't do anything with it in that realm. You have to come back here to apply it.
Yes.
And so even though there's this desire to just stay there and mingle, eventually you reach the realization that even if you did that, it wouldn't amount to anything. So there is something about the idea of these two realities and you behaving as a link between them, which solidifies the significance of the whole thing. I think if you remain only on one side or the other, it's kind of pointless. If you're just oscillating around in the spiritual realm or whatever you choose to call that other place, you may be experiencing wonderful things, but you can't do anything with it. And on the other hand, if you stay here and just mumble your way through life, so to speak, that may appear to be interesting or worthwhile, but in the grander sense, it's also useless. So there's something to be said for the idea of actually stepping back and forth between the two states of consciousness or the two worlds or whatever you choose to call it.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, that's interesting what you just said, because when I wrote this piece, when I was inspired to write it, I didn't really think about why I was writing it. I just did it. And I was hearing all the parts and everything, so I set about to recording it while I was in that zone, we'll say. And I suppose one could say, well, it's a song, but the idea is that this music will put one in touch with that realm. It'll allow you to sort of tune into these higher frequencies. And I found myself creating sound, synthesized, but nonetheless, waveforms that hadn't really been used. And so I got some interesting sounds out of it, too. Sort of spacey and haunting, very transparent, and yet something that we're not used to hearing. We're not conditioned to hear. And it has a very soothing effect on the etheric body of the listener. And all you have to do is visualize color. You don't really have to try to imagine what the grids are like. You just visualize the colors that the music is creating, because there are counterparts in light to the sounds that it used. So
I can see that. I can see that very clearly.
You know, and you know, it hit me tonight. This should be played tonight, just because of what it was intended to do. And I think, you know, some minds and hearts will open, or will have opened, from listening to it. And one might, doesn't even have to be conscious of it happening. That's the beauty of it. Well, Jim,
in a lot of ways, you're not conscious of everything that's going on, even in yourself. And that's
sure.
That's part of the reality of life. It's also part of the tragedy of life, because I have a few things to say about that, actually, in a minute or two. But since you opened the door to musical creativity and the interaction between music and the composer, I guess we can say, it brought to mind something that might be worthwhile repeating. I just read it earlier tonight, as a matter of fact. It was an interview with Jim Morrison of The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not a fan of them necessarily, although I like some of their music. So forgive me for not knowing which one of The Doors Jim Morrison is, but I assume he must be like the leader or something.
He was the front door, actually.
He was the front door.
He was okay. The front man and the lead singer.
Well, anyway, he was interviewed for Cream magazine in 1970 by somebody named Lizzie James. Have you ever heard of that person?
Yes, Cream magazine, if I'm not mistaken, was Al Bennett's magazine. That's a whole other story. I don't want to take you off on a tangent, but yes, I heard of it.
Okay, well, there's a little excerpt here from that interview, which is really worth reading. It's only two paragraphs long. And this is Jim Morrison's comment. It says, "The most important kind of freedom is to be what you really are." He says, "Normally we trade in... we trade in your reality for a specific role. You trade in your sense for an act. You give up your ability to feel, and in exchange you put on a mask. There can't be any large-scale revolution until there's a personal revolution on an individual level. It's got to happen inside you first. You can take away a man's political freedom, and you won't hurt him unless you take away his freedom to feel. That can destroy him. That kind of freedom can't be granted. Nobody can win it for you. It must be an act. It must be a personal act." So I just thought that was a very interesting observation, because in a lot of ways it sums up many of the things we've tried to say in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it also ties in with your opening comments about your own creation. So I just felt that should be read.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I agree with what he said, and I would presume that he was speaking, or he was saying more than maybe someone else would have wanted him to say in that regard. You know, he was speaking the truth.
Yeah, of course.
And we know how others feel about that. So, yeah, but that's very true. And I suppose he left it up to each individual to take responsibility for themselves in his admonition. That's basically what he would say.
And that's how it has to be anyway, you know, regardless of how you analyze it. That's the ultimate truth right there. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you're not going to do anything, nothing's going to happen for you. That's pretty evident.
Yeah. Now, Jim,
anyway,
I'm going to ask...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you a very elementary question. For the sake of hearing you respond from you know, the perspective of a scientist, an inventor, and someone that looks at these... I don't want to say occult, because it gives people the impression that it's dark or evil, but the hidden aspect of your involvement in tapping into the universe on this level. We've talked about this on other shows, but I want to sort of set a foundation. The average person, and you could use yourself as an example. But the average person who is, okay, they say, well, let me try this. Let me begin the process of discovering who I really am. What would you say to that person to set a solid foundation?
That's a tough one because there's so many things that come into play when you attempt to go down that path. I would have to say that any exercise or any activity that results in a new realization within the same apparent framework is something worth doing. What do I mean by that? Well, let me use something as an example. And unfortunately, it's kind of a personal thing in the sense that it's subjective. It's not private. It's just subjective. But I'll try to use it to get the point across. As you guys probably know, I do a lot of research in electromagnetics. And a lot of times, you know, your own conditioning sets the precedent for what you observe. And this is not only true in research, it's true in life in general. So let's say that I'm doing some kind of an experiment, I'm taking some notes, and I notice something that's outside the norm. It's an anomaly or a quirk. So I'll write it down. You know, I'll say, oh, under such and such a condition, this happened. Now, a lot of times when that occurs, I'm blind to the meaning of that. Even though I'm describing it and even though I'm seeing it in context of what I'm trying to investigate, it somehow doesn't fit. And that's why you notice it. But, I mean, it's like you know it's part of the larger picture, but you're not sure how to assemble it, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I've noticed is that when that occurs, if you just put that aside and don't do anything with it, that's exactly where it remains, put aside. But if you start to trust in the process and you say, well, wait a minute, you know, if that wasn't relevant, why would it show up? So then the second intelligent thing to do is to test for repeatability. Okay, is it something that I misinterpreted? Is it something that's, you know, only a one-time thing, in which case I'll never know what the heck it means? Or is it repeatable? So you go through the process all over again, and bingo, there it is. Well, if you do that five or six times, at least you come to the belief, well, whatever it is or whatever it means, it's repeatable and it's real. So then, you know, if you're truly inspired by the scientific process, or call it what you will, the need to know or the desire for truth, you're not going to be able to let it go at that point. And so you keep on musing on it and looking at it from different points of view. And I will tell you unequivocally, with 100% accuracy, and I definitely want to emphasize that number, if you do that long enough, all of a sudden, something happens. Now, I can't tell you what it is that happens, because it's almost some kind of a transcendent experience, but all of a sudden, that anomaly makes sense, and it fits into the rest of the gestalt, and you say to yourself, oh, how in the world did I not realize what that meant? The interesting thing is, once you reach that condition, or that level of consciousness would even be an okay description, you can never go back to the way it was before. Everything changes. You will see that investigation from a totally different point of view. Your understanding of the overall process will be forever altered. And more interesting is the fact that once you start to include that that new piece of information in your thinking, it will definitely lead to a much broader experience in whatever it is you're trying to do. And then the same thing happens on another level. And so it's almost like reality is fractal in the sense that every little fragment of it is composed of other fragments and on and on and on, you know, to infinity. And your job is to become aware of as many of those fractions as you can possibly manage. And each time you do that, it's like assembling a mosaic. The picture becomes more and more explained as you add pieces to the puzzle.
Yes.
And with that, of course, is an expansion of your mind or of your consciousness. So it's not a question of sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to do.
Okay, now we lost Jim's audio. Jim, if you're still there, keep talking. Don, if you can get Jim back on the line. I think we're having a little bit of a problem. I'm not hearing him. So I do not know if he is there or just sort of muted. We'll try that again. Don, if you're listening in, and let me know that you've gotten this message. Jim is not on the air with us right now. Okay, he's on top of it. Great. It's interesting when we get into these discussions and we start to reveal a little bit of truth.
Don?
How? Yes, okay, you're back.
Yeah, I think they're playing the same game again. They must not really like this subject matter.
Yeah.
What was the last thing that you heard? Because
well,
I have no idea where I was cut off.
You were describing how once you get to this place of consciousness, you expand. I was actually trying to interject something at that point, and you just went totally blank. But you mentioned the expansion, and you said that one cannot return back to the state one was in prior to this experience.
Yeah, that's so. Right. And I think the next thing I said after that was it gives the indication that reality is fractal in nature.
Yes.
In the sense that it expands upward and downward in, you know, little tiny repeatable facets, and our job is to become aware of as many of those as possible and see how they fit together. It's like a big mosaic.
Yes.
If you're assembling a mosaic piece by piece, in the beginning it may not mean very much, but eventually the picture starts to form. And of course, the more you work at this process, the larger and more complete the picture becomes, and with that, your appreciation for the whole. The only difference, of course, is that this is an infinitely large mosaic we're playing with, and so you can only appreciate so much of it in a given lifetime, but it's still a worthwhile pursuit.
Yes. Now, you mentioned something that made me want to add to what you said, sort of to confirm it and expand upon it just a little bit. You mentioned the change, that the person is going to undergo change. While that is happening, the individual is also affecting everything else the same way.
Absolutely.
So if that person is raising their general frequency of consciousness and expanding their consciousness, then they're affecting everything that is in the universe, really, in some amount. Okay. Now, I also wanted to say that the individual who is searching to find his or herself, in other words, they want to get to know this person. It isn't so much like you're asking the question, you know, who am I? And boom, there's the answer. Sometimes the answer comes very slowly to you in a variety of, let's say, fractals, like you said, Jim, experiences, moments in time. But you also have to consider that those happen in your consciousness right now when you're inside the box and you're not familiar with who you really are. You tend to think and feel in a linear fashion. From this moment, you see yourself moving in some direction in your mind and into time. Yet the process of looking into oneself allows you to stay in one place and expand outward from that place in a multidimensional fashion. So instead of visualizing yourself as traveling down a road or along a line, a painted line or a dotted line, you're actually just starting from a seed and expanding outward in every direction.
And, yeah, I'm glad you actually brought that up because it's a perfect prelude to the next thing that I wanted to mention, and that is that most people in life, especially in our culture, I'm not even going to expand that comment to include other cultures because the cultural aspects are relative, and so it may not be true for other cultures. But in our culture, we're more or less trained that the left brain becomes dominant in the sense that we have to look at everything logically. We take things step by step, and we progress through life in a linear fashion, which is exactly what you just said. The interesting thing is that the left brain analyzes data in what might be conceived as a sequence of pictures or a sequence of facts, almost like when you draw a little cartoon on a pad and then you flip it. You know, each little picture is a little bit different from the one before that, and so it causes the brain to appreciate, an apparent or a hallucination, if you will, that implies movement, motion, or progression.
That's how they make
sense. The interesting thing is that the subconscious mind, that is indicative of series processing. So for those computer nerds out there who are familiar with that, when your left brain is dominant and you proceed through life picture frame by picture frame, that's a series process. But the subconscious mind, which is really the higher mind, is a parallel processor. And unlike some of the more sophisticated computers available today that have two or three parallel processors, the subconscious has literally tens of thousands of them, and it can process so much information so quickly that it far exceeds the capability of the so-called conscious mind in the left hemisphere. An example of this is like let's say it's somebody that you really know well, like let's say your spouse. If you look at that person, and oftentimes you can't even explain what you saw, but you just from that one glance, you can surmise that there's a problem. You can surmise that something's wrong. You can pick out the mood. Sometimes you can even pick the area in which the complaint resides. If you stop and think about it, I mean, everybody does this at one point or another in their lives, and they take it for granted because it's just something that happens. But if you stop and think about it, in order to assemble and assess and categorize all of the information necessary to come to those conclusions, you're dealing with hundreds of millions of bits of information. It isn't a simple thing to do, and yet it happens in an instant. That you just know. And so the point I'm trying to make is that the other part of your brain, the right side of your brain that controls all this stuff, is designed to do something completely different than the part that we insist upon living in. And the right side of the brain is actually your doorway to the larger aspects of the whole universe. And that's worth developing. Now, of course, a lot of people are afraid of that, especially because if they're really entrenched in the linear way of life, there's a certain amount of security there. There's a certain amount of familiarity. And you find yourself saying, well, I'm very content here. I know what's going to happen next. I know that if I do this, I get that result, you know, things like that. And so there's a certain safety in living that way. I mean, it's a lot different to imagine yourself in a world where the things that you think are going to happen don't happen, and completely apparently unrelated things occur, or the progression is nonlinear. As a matter of fact, you brought out an interesting point when you said it happens in all directions. It's almost like an expanding sphere.
Yeah, the way or things, an explosion. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not destructive like an explosion, but certainly it's a spreading out of the energy from a central point.
Right, and that's something that is so all-encompassing from the standpoint of personal experience that we are in a constant battle between the desire to do that and make ourselves aware that the real reality is much bigger. And the other side of the battle is remaining in the comfort zone of what we're used to. And so the interesting thing is this duality brings us to the scientific concerns associated with this, and back to that Heisenberg uncertainty principle that I mentioned to you. I don't remember if we discussed it last week or not, but I don't think we were in any great detail with it. But do you remember on another show we discussed at one point the dual slit experiment?
Oh, yes. That was a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember anymore when it was. But yeah. The interesting thing is if you fire a bunch of electrons at a fixed target, like a solid wall, or a photographic plate, for instance, when you develop that plate, you'll see the little microscopic impact points where each of these particles actually collided with the film. But if you insert a grid between the electron gun and the film pack that has two little slots, separated by the proper interval, the entire experiment changes. And what happens, instead of seeing individual particle impacts, it's almost like the electrons go through both slits at the same time, and in order to do that, they assume the properties of a wave function. And instead of seeing impact points, you'll now see interference patterns, just like you would, you know, looking at the result of throwing a couple of stones into a pond a foot or two apart. The ripples interact with one another, and you get colliding, expanding circles.
Mm-hmm.
Happens with light, it's referred to as an interference pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And
the interesting thing is,
oh, I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to insert something. Yeah, it's a sort of a combination between reflection and refraction.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's both, because you have points where the effects reinforce each other and points where they cancel each other, and the net result is this circular, unusual circular pattern that's referred to as an interference pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that this whole thing evolved because scientists were trying to understand why you can't measure the position of a subatomic particle and its velocity at the same time. And what they finally concluded was that the reason you can't do it is because your consciousness, at those levels, your consciousness has a direct interaction with the experiments at hand, and it affects the outcome. So if you're trying to measure, you know, let's say the velocity, your attention or your concentration on that parameter will automatically steer the experiment so that the results are manifesting the way you anticipate them to do.
Yeah.
And so your mind isn't capable under normal conditions of appreciating both parameters simultaneously. So whichever one you focus on is the one you get. And now that's a very, very intense and an amazing statement.
Now, Jim, suppose one intuited what that felt like to have both responses be your reality, but not in a thought, in a feeling.
Well, I've actually tried to do that, and I came up with something which I don't know how to explain. But the interesting thing is that I didn't focus. And I think that that's the key to the whole thing. As a matter of fact, that's the message in this whole book about the principle of miracles or the physics of miracles, is that in order to enter the larger gestalt of reality, you can't anticipate or concentrate on anything in particular. You just have to exist without, only with intent, but not with direction, in this other realm. Mm-hmm. And then things begin to happen. But in the beginning, it's very difficult to do this, and so you just have to concentrate on, or not concentrate, see, I'm contradicting myself. You have to become aware of or notice anything unusual that happens.
Yeah.
And you see, we normally have a tendency to throw that away because the linear part of the brain says, well, it's not relevant. And so there's no point in cluttering up the processor with that information. But actually, that's exactly what you want to do. You know, like if you're meditating and all of a sudden you start thinking about, or you start seeing images of something that seems totally off the wall, if you discard that, you're actually doing yourself an injustice. What you really need to do is to ponder that without concentrating on it and just say, how does that fit into the picture? You have to realize that when you're dealing in that realm, the difference is that you're no longer in a closed loop. You're in an open-ended system, and anything can happen in an open-ended system, especially in the universe. So rather than limit it for purposes of your own convenience, what you have to get used to doing is to explore whatever is presented to you. Do you know what I mean, Doug?
Yes, you're saying exactly what I was thinking. You see, one would say, well, I'm going to make this experience what I choose it to be. And the whole point is to find out what it is, to tap into it, to make the connection with it, you see. Not to have a predetermined outcome, but to accept what comes to you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
While I was listening to you, something just hit me. You know, it was one of those da-da moments, real fast. You were talking about the subconscious, and you were talking about its ability to rise above the mind because it's capable of recording everything, all the experiences, all the knowledge, both conscious and unconscious. And the subconscious, I think, may intentionally have been called that so that we wouldn't look at it as the, let's say, supra-conscious? You know, they tell us the opposite of everything they want us to know. So just in terms of the way they present things to us, sub usually means below.
Right,
but,
right.
But your explanation is describing it as having the capacity to be above.
Well sure, because think of it this way. The gurus and the yogis and all those people describe a permanent connection to that realm as entering God consciousness. And if you look at it from that point of view, then you realize that that has to be above the consciousness that we adhere to. The consciousness that we adhere to is very much limited, whereas God consciousness is obviously universal, and therefore it's very worthwhile attaining. The biggest obstacle to getting to that position, however, is our own insistence that our reality is the reality, and we reinforce that all the time by attending to our ego, to our belief system, to our everyday mundane little activities. Everything that we do in that regard more or less reinforces our position in the linear world and prevents us from entering this other realm to a greater extent.
Yes, I agree. I don't mean to take you off track, but something's impulsing me to play a song, and it's an instrumental by Larry Carlton called "The Philosopher," and this is a piece
What's it called?
The Philosopher.
Oh, philosopher. Okay.
Yes, he had a near-death experience. He was assaulted and knifed in the neck, and nearly died, and I suppose he had a near-death experience from the music on this album, On Solid Ground. He's written some really beautiful pieces that demonstrate that he's come to a very profound understanding of who he is and why he came here. And although he plays with the same soulful, kind of bluesy style, he's a guitarist. And he's known for a lot of studio work as a guitar player on other people's albums. His original music is really a reflection on his true self. And this album was his coming back from that near-death experience. This is The Philosopher.
Is he still living?
Oh, yes, yes.
Thank you.
Larry Carlton and the philosopher. Jim, that is exactly what you were talking about, in my opinion. He did exactly what you described.
Well, it's not surprising because that's the source of all creativity. And everybody should be striving to get there, at least in some capacity.
Yeah, not necessarily through the process that Larry Carlton went through, but nonetheless, I guess however you get there is for your best interest. One way or another, there'll be a lesson to learn if you went about it maybe the wrong way, or you know, if you had other choices you could have made. Then again, what happens is usually the best lesson. Again, so.
Yeah, that's the important thing that we have to realize, that whether we decide to take an active part in this process or whether we choose to be passive and let life roll along at its own pace and in its own direction, either way, the soul is eventually brought to higher and higher levels of evolution and understanding. That's the interesting thing about the whole process. If you really don't want to do anything, it's going to happen to you anyway. It just takes longer. But I think part of the real adventure of life is not to just be like the guy who is in a boat on a river and pulls in his oars and says, gee, I wonder what's going to come next. You know, what's around the bend? Well, it might be a 200-foot waterfall, you know. The more intelligent thing to do is to pick up the oars and go where you want to go. And we have that capability, except that it takes a lot of effort. But I think that in terms of a conscious realization and a more accelerated path, it may take more work, but I think it's much more gratifying than just, you know, sitting around and waiting to see what's going to happen.
Well, it may have seemed unfair or inconvenient for me to have asked you that question about, you know, how would you, what would you suggest to a person? Because, of course, you know, the answer is not, well, I think you should bake cupcakes for the rest of your life. And so the person just blindly follows what you say, or they become a tap dancer, you know, because you happen to think the world is a little bit short of tap dancers. So it's up to the person, as you described, to allow that message to come through. You have to trust. I mean, you can put out the question. You can say it in the form of a prayer. You can meditate on a concept, an idea. You can just ask the question and see who answers. But be certain to intend that the answer comes from a source of truth and not some other false reality that you're replacing this false reality with. It's about really finding reality. And
it's also about developing trust. You have to test your source. And then once it has proven itself to be reliable and pristine, then you have to learn to trust it. And that's difficult. I mean, I know it sounds easy to say that, but it really is difficult, because a lot of times you will be given information which is either so off the wall that you don't know what to do with it, or you might even be afraid of it. Or other times you won't understand it. But if you start to go with it, whatever it is that's presented to you, you'll eventually discover the meaning in it. And it's very important to see it through and verify the validity of whatever was given to you for the purpose it was given, because that closes the feedback loop. And once you do that a number of times, you begin to realize, hey, this mechanism is real. it doesn't matter whether you completely understand it or not, because you never will. But what's important is that you know how to use it and you trust the information that it gives you. That's where the enrichment of your life comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the gamble part is, because you have to make up your mind whether or not you want to adhere to the security of the linear lifestyle, or if you want to go open loop and plug into the universe.
Mm-hmm. You know, last week, Jim, you and I talked quite a bit about miracles and whether they were, in fact, I think the past 2 weeks we've been on that topic a bit. And we both remarked that really miracles are the manifestation of the norm, or what one should expect when one is in tune with the universe or the creator. And this transcends religion per se, because you don't need to be in a building with a group of other people to have this understanding or this experience. In fact, you're more likely to find it or to connect with this source being on your own and not being influenced by what others are doing or what others are saying, because it really requires a sort of, like you said, trust, but a quiet trust. You're not being rowdy necessarily while this process is going on, but you're going within. You're listening to your heartbeat. You're listening to your physical self. And every time a thought comes forth, you just gently allow it to pass and dissipate, and don't really pay attention to it, and go within. This process is really interesting, because then you will begin thinking, but you will think about what you are perceiving, what you are feeling. Eventually, when you're successful in tapping into this frequency, and you will experience harmonics, which is really the fundamental of what we were talking about, the physicality of energy spreading out from a single point. And you described the ripple on a pond. That's one way to look at it. Or I use the term explosion. If you could see something exploding outward in a, let's say, a piece of ice exploding into a powder that just expands equally in every direction. It's sort of like that. That's what you're looking to feel, getting off this two-dimensional pathway and allowing yourself to expand and trusting that if you do it that way with good intention, honorable intention, then you will tap into the creation, the very process, and you will affect it as you do that. So there's a benefit, because you raise the overall mean frequency when you do that. And the more you do it, and the more you affect others to do the same thing, it just keeps expanding exponentially. And that's where our true power lies. Jim, I don't mean to be so long-winded on that, but I did want to make that comment so that you could put your two cents in.
Well, no, I don't think that was being overbearing. I think it's a good observation. And furthermore, it touches on the real secret, if you want to use that word, behind miracles. You know, it's interesting to me, like, for instance, if you look at some kind of a movie that talks about a magician, and I don't mean a guy who does sleight of hand, but I mean somebody who's into real magic, they always show you the guy concentrating, like he's exerting some incredible effort to make whatever it is happen.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you ever try that, that is exactly what you need to do so that nothing will happen. Because the true miracle resides in the fact that you are prompting the universe to do your bidding. It isn't, you're not doing anything. All you're doing is putting out the intention or the request.
Yes.
The real power never comes from you.
Yes.
And so the secret is learning to let go, trusting in the universe, and releasing that that prayer or that request with intent and knowing that it will be done. As a matter of fact, years ago, I did experiments with telekinesis. I was probably in my late teens, and I was just fascinated by that subject. And I did not have a lot of success with it, I'll be honest with you. But what I noticed, which was interesting, the few times that I did see something happen was exactly when I wasn't trying to do anything. I just knew what the outcome would be. And that's a very difficult state to get into because it only exists for an instant. But in that instant, an enormous amount of things can happen. Miracles can happen, cures, movement, knowing, all sorts of stuff. So I think that these people that really can plug into that and remain that way for extended periods have reached a point where they can disconnect from the personality aspect, shed the ego, and just be plugged into the universe. Without the conscious mind being involved. And if you stop and think of it, that's like dying. You know, and that's like, the French have a term, le petite mort, which means mm-hmm. the little death. And they use that to describe an orgasm because you completely lose yourself in that experience. And this is very similar to that in the sense that you have to realize that to succeed at any form of miracle, whether it's moving a penny without putting your finger on it or curing someone of a tenacious disease, it only happens when you're not there. You just have to allow the universe to do it. And it has nothing to do with you or your personality. And that's a hard thing. Very hard thing, especially for people that are entrenched in a linear existence.
Yes, I agree. I don't know what I could add to that, actually, without going off, you know, into a deeper topic. But it's interesting, Jim, that I knew in a sense that we would be in a general way talking about this topic, but I find myself wanting to go to that level where I understand it from the beginning of our conversation, and I really want to, you know, start from a place where most people can grasp and feel what we're talking about. So it is difficult. Just the process, as you rightfully pointed out, of doing this by oneself is, but that's sort of how you have to do it. Eventually, you have to look within yourself, and you have to open up, and you have to make that decision, that determination of what your desire is. It's not an issue even of wants and needs, which are negatives. I mean, they describe a situation of being without. And when you put a want and a need out to the universe, despite what certain books tell you, The Secret, for example, you can be whatever you believe. Well, a belief isn't an absolute. So you can be something that you are not, is what it's really saying, in a roundabout way. And it's sort of programming someone for failure, even though it appears on the surface that the statement is intended to inspire you. See, on a higher level, the universe understands want and need as a lack. And you say, well, you know, you're praying to God, dear Father, I want a lot of money so I can build a house and start my own business. Or I want $1 million. And so you're telling God, you're telling the creation, you're telling the universe, I am lacking $1 million. And the universe responds, okay, you're lacking $1 million. We agree. There's
right.
a total.
That's exactly the same thing that happens with trying to cure something or somebody. Because
yes.
trying to cure a disease, when you use the word cure, the counterpart of that is admission of disease. And you can't transmit the two desires at one time because they cancel each other out. And you certainly don't want to put yourself or the other person in the situation where you are verifying the existence of the condition, because that reinforces it. So the real trick is to just let go and allow the universe to do what it's going to do. And that's the part that's so difficult. I'm actually only up to, in that book that I quoted you earlier, I'm only up to the part right now where they're describing various exercises, you know, to allow you to achieve that type of thing. But one thing that they do say, which I think is kind of interesting, they said that once you get a group of people who have all succeeded at doing this, even in small ways, and you have them in the same room with one another, the success ratio goes up very, very quickly, because the reinforcement is not just a personal thing waiting for an individual feedback. The overall belief system compounds itself and begins to become a group experience. And so in that regard, seminars that are properly presented can have a very positive effect, apparently. And that's something worth considering, because I think that this is a very powerful concept, and it's got to be a very ancient concept too, because certainly other masters have known these secrets over the centuries. The problem is that it's been suppressed, it's been hidden. Reality has been altered to keep us away from that area of ourselves for the benefit of others, as we have so often said. And so it makes the task even more difficult. But if you look at things that are hinted in the Gnostic writings, for instance, everybody's heard of Jesus Christ. Using Christ as an example, for instance, there are lots of writings which suggest that he actually went off possibly to the Orient, possibly to Tibet, certainly to someplace, India or wherever, in the missing years for his public ministry, and was taught by others how to magnify this natural capability. And so in that respect, we have to realize that regardless of who you are, there is a great deal of effort involved in doing this until you reach the point where it can become self-compounding. And that's true of anything. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're trying to evolve carpentry skills or martial arts skills or whatever, you know. And by the way, speaking of martial arts, there is one aspect, there are actually many, but there is one aspect of that field of endeavor that has always fascinated me, and that's the samurai archers. The things that those guys could do with a bow and arrow defies imagination. I mean, they can hit targets in total darkness. They can be blindfolded. You know, it doesn't matter what you ask them to do. The outcome is totally miraculous. And they are using this type of a principle. You know, when you start to read about that stuff, you find out that these guys talked to their arrows. You know, they projected information into the entire system and released the arrow with total confidence of what it was going to do. Well, that's a telekinetic achievement, and that's something that's exactly related to what we're talking about. So there are so many aspects of life where this stuff is actually already in play, but it's not recognized as such.
Yeah. Now you can take the same principle and apply it to something else and make it work that way.
Yeah, like that guy I told you about last week that always had a parking space. Yes. I mean, he had it down to a point where it was almost unbelievable. Even in rush hour and everything else, he said, oh, don't worry, when we get there, someone will be just backing out. And it was always true.
Yeah, and as soon as he said that, he actually put that word out there, you see, and someone picked it up. Someone at the last moment said, you know, I think I'm going to go home. I'm not having a good time. And they get in their car and leave, see. Or they just came out of a store from shopping and they're finished, and the timing was just immaculate. That's how the universe works. It doesn't have to experience a lot of trial and error on the part of the fractal aspects of itself. What happens, happens, and it responds accordingly. And influences, in turn, the original sender of the information that went out to it. So, well, Jim, I could go on for hours, but we've got to wrap up the show. I want to allow you the opportunity to make a closing comment and thank you for tackling such a deep topic, especially when, you know, your specialty is is really, you know, the science and the invention. But this is just a mere reflection of who you are, too. It's natural for you to do this. But I appreciate the time and the heart that you put into looking at it.
Well, I don't mind doing it because, don't forget, it affects my personal growth, and that's why it's something that I really cherish. I wish that I could, you know, get on here and pontificate about being an expert in this, but I'm not. The only way that I can really say I'm tapping in on a regular basis is when I do it for the sake of my research, which I've been doing automatically since I was a kid. But I want to broaden those horizons and get into some of this other stuff, because I've always had a great attraction to things like healing and some of the other more occult or hidden aspects of life. And it seems to me that since this was presented to me by a friend of mine, and I didn't ask for it, at least wise not directly, then I take that as a sign that I should pursue it. And anybody else that's interested in this, I really and truly suggest that you get the book that I'm reading. It's an easy read. It's not complicated. But it gets right to the heart of the matter, and it even gives exercises and examples and things of that nature. It's called The Physics of Miracles by Richard Bartlett. And it's a paperback. You know, it's a good-sized paperback. I think it runs about $15. But it's well worth it. And if you're really interested in this stuff, and you're not just on here to hear two guys jabbering every week, then I would make the investment. Go out and buy a book and read it. I think you'll find it fascinating.
Yes, well said, Jim. And you mentioned also by Richard Bartlett, Matrix Energetics.
Yeah, that was his first book. And it's written more on an introductory level in the sense that it just barely acquaints you with what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, you know. But the one that I think is more in depth is the second one. But I bought them both, and I'm halfway through the second one also. So I think that it's a good investment, and if you're really serious about it, it's a door opener.
Yes.
I'm also going to look into the possibility of attending one of his seminars here this coming spring. And I know he's got a website. I forget what it is, but if you do a Google search on his name or on the subject matter, I'm sure that it'll come up. And there's some reference there to his seminar schedule for anybody who's interested.
Well, yeah, he sounds like a very interesting man, very knowledgeable, and in line with what we've been talking about, for sure. I appreciate your contribution to the show, Jim, and I want to let the listening audience know that you'll be with us next Friday. So you have a great weekend yourself, and I look forward to the next show. Stick with us, Jim. I want to also thank those Wind Talkers radio broadcasters that have helped us get the word out tonight, and either live or those that play an archive later on in the day in your part of the world. Over at BBS Radio, Don Newsom on the sound. We had Seth Hendrick in the beginning. Don's taken over since then. I also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, have a great weekend. I wish you all a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.